The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
I'm joined now by Luke O'Neill, Professor of Biochemistry at Trinity College in Dublin, and we're going to find out something about genes of one of our own species, but which we don't share.
That's right, Pat. Yeah, this is one you spotted, to give you credit. The Papua New Guineans, Pat. Now, in Papua New Guinea, humans arrived there 50,000 years ago through our migrations.
Yeah.
And then they've been isolated for all that time. So their genes are very interesting. What genes have survived and how have they managed to survive in terms of genetics? And what's fascinating is the Highlanders have variants of genes that let them survive at high altitude. They can cope with low oxygen. The lowlanders have great immune systems because they're surviving infectious diseases. And through genes, we've discovered lots about the Papua New Guinea.
So do we know which genes they are and whether or not any of us possess any of those genes?
We do. Yeah, they're variants in genes, of course. And it's like survival of the fittest. You can imagine that when people arrive there, the ones who survived at altitude had to have certain genes to give them survival.
So the rest of them died off, but those who started to thrive at high altitudes, then passed on those to others.
Exactly, yeah. And this one is called NCAPD2. The other is called EPAS1. It's all about red blood cells, Pat, because as you know, in our blood, we've red blood cells for oxygen. They've got very good red blood cells that can store oxygen, good hemoglobin, because those variants are overactive, if you know what I mean. They're more active in those people, and they would have survived at the high altitude, and the rest of the people died off. And of course, it teaches us a bit about how blood cells form, and these genes weren't especially understood before, you know, so it's kind of new insights into red blood cells.
Now, who were the Denisovians?
Well, that's the next bit. That's fascinating, yes. So 200,000 years ago, Pat, we evolved, as you might remember, as Homo sapiens. We leave Africa, we end up in Papua New Guinea 50,000 years ago. We meet another subspecies of human there called Denisovans. And in 2010, Russian scientists actually, using bones from a cave in Siberia and the DNA, realised there was a third subspecies of human. Now, you may know about the Neanderthals, that they were in Europe. The Denisovans were in Asia and in Siberia. And we think what happened was 700,000 years ago, that long time ago, we split from another subspecies. They became Neanderthals or Denisovans, if you know what I mean. There were three by 400,000 years.
Yeah, ago, and we all know people who have a bit of Neanderthal in them.
We do.
So do we know people who have a bit of Denisovan in them?
Oh, we do. And the Asians and the Papua New Guineans have 5% Denisovan DNA. So again, at some point they interbred, and then they went back to their own subspecies, and that got diluted out, and you end up with 5% of the genome coming from Denisovans. And that's where these genes are, Pat. That's what makes it really interesting. It looks as if we picked up these genes for survival from these Denisovans who were there already.
How did the Denisovans get their name? It sounds a very modern name, doesn't it? Denisovans.
Well, it was only 2010. A Russian scientist in a cave in Siberia called Denisova finds these bones, looks at the DNA, sequences it, and realises this is not us, this is a different subspecies. And they're called Denisovans because there was a hermit living in that cave called Denis. That's where the name came from. And it was known as the Denisovans cave. Now, he was in the 1700s, mind you, but there was a history of a hermit living in that cave, and hence they were named after this species, the subspecies were named after the bones in that cave.
Now, if the Papua New Guineans were isolated for so long, what happened then when the rest of us arrived to knock on their door? Did we infect them with all sorts of things?
Well, we did, but there's a bit of interbreeding, obviously, because they were so isolated. Eventually, we explore Papua New Guinea, you know, in our travels, and then you begin to get some interbreeding, but they were pretty pure. They didn't interbreed too much, so that like an isolated tribe, if you will. You know, the first thing.
But you know the way when Europeans went to North America, and the Native Americans were substantially wiped out by disease before they got the musket going.
Yeah, exactly. And this one is interesting. So the lowlanders, there was 40% death from infectious diseases through time, they reckon, in that population. So therefore, if you had a strong immune system, you would survive that. And we see that in their DNA. And I think LGBP2, which my lab actually has an interest in, but that's a very important immune gene. There's a variant of that that's slightly more active. And those people with that gene survived this risk of infection, either from us going in as Europeans or through history. And guess what, Pat? That was Denisovans as well. So again, it was interbreeding. They picked up that variant, and then the people are descended from those who interbred with those Denisovans. And a good way to think about it is the lowlanders have very strong white blood cells to fight infection. The uplanders have very strong red blood cells for the oxygen, and that's very clear, the distinction between the two populations.
So what are the conditions that the lowlanders can resist that the upper people can't?
Yeah, they reckon it was malaria for a start. And malaria was rampant in the jungles of Papua New Guinea, for instance. And then secondly, bacterial infections as well. And again, you can see now, survival of the fittest. The ones who had this GBP2 variant, they survived, had children. The rest didn't have children. And then we see that in the descendants from those.
Mind you, in the uplands, because I remember when I was in Zimbabwe, I was delighted to find there were no mosquitoes around. Because it was high altitude.
You've got it, yeah. And there was no need to select out the gene.
No need to select.
Precisely.
You didn't need it.
It's great science. They took 74 Highlanders, and or 54 Highlanders, 74 Lowlanders, and there was a real distinction. The Highlanders had the red blood cell gene.
Yeah.
Lowlanders had the white, because you're right, there was no selective pressure in the Highlands for infection, and therefore that gene didn't persist there, only persisted in the Lowland, yeah. And vice versa. You know, the other one didn't persist in the Lowland.
So now having discovered this, what relevance does it have? What can we use this information for?
Yeah, well, it's our history as a species in a way, but, you know, that we did interbreed with Denisovans. Of course, we interbred with Neanderthals, as we were saying as well. That's one thing, our history as a species on Earth is the first thing. But secondly, of course, these two genes for red blood cells, they're really interesting. They could be treated, like they could be targeted in various ways, boosted for anemia, say, to help people with blood disorders. The immune side, if you can trigger GBP2 and push it harder, say with a new medicine, you'd have a stronger immune response. And that would be the next place this would go. So, for example, to make a vaccine work better, give a GBP2 activator. And now we know that protein is very important. So it's a fascinating thing, the way these discoveries come from an understanding.
And then the other gene, I'm thinking that all the athletes listening in are thinking, aha.
You've got it.
This would be the one now for me. If I can get this gene activated, I'll be able to run longer, faster, harder.
You've got it exactly. Yeah, we could modify that gene in humans to live at altitude or run faster. You never know. None of that would happen, mind
you. So if you could modify that gene, it could not be detected because it's your gene.
Well, yes.
So when the drug testers come along, there's nothing to see here.
Well, yeah, but it's a variant, remember. So you might have one variant that's less effective for the red blood cells. I've got the one that's good. It's slightly different. We can tell by the gene sequence.
But they couldn't prove that you did it to yourself, or could they?
I don't know. Good question.
I inherited that from
Maybe I should go and breed with the Highlanders of Papua New Guinea and inherit that gene. That's one way to do it, because it is natural. Exactly. You could do it that way.
Yeah, I always had a bit of Denisovan blood in me. I knew it.
There you have it. Exactly.
There. All right, Luke. Fascinating stuff. And we had to go to the far reaches of Papua New Guinea to find it. One last thing. When we talk about these variations, 50,000 years in the history of humankind doesn't seem like a long time for these variants to
It doesn't, does it? But you do survive to the fittest. You can imagine if 90% are wiped out by a parasite, the 10% who survive would have slightly different genes, and then they will pass them on to the next generation. In fact, infectious diseases are the quickest pressure on our whole system, because survival of the fittest again. So it doesn't seem like too long, but it's long enough for these things to...
I mean, if you take that a generation is 15 years, because that's when people are fit to breed, say, at the age of 15, you've got, what, 6.5 generations in every 100 years. So in every 1,000 years, you've got 65, and in every, and do the multiplication. So it's not quite as good as looking at bacteria.
Not quite, but not that dissimilar either.
Not that dissimilar.
Exactly, yeah, it's a fascinating thing, isn't it?
In geological time, sure, it's only a...
The blink of an eye.
The blink of an eye. Luke O'Neill, Professor of Biochemistry at Trinity College in Dublin, thank you.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.